Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. Here's the story of innovation told in 5 words. Try. Explore. Connect. Pivot. Transform. See what happened there? As soon as Connect entered the story, innovation became achievable. That's why Deloitte works with clients and tech alliances to bring together the people, ideas, and technologies to overcome, solve, and of course, transform. Connect to what matters for innovation. Start at Deloitte.com/US/innovate.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
It's on!
Hey, I'm Kara Swisher, and this is not On with Kara Swisher. Instead, we're going to share another show from New York Magazine we think you'll like. In fact, I know you'll love it. It's called Into It, and it's hosted by my colleague, the one and only Sam Sanders. In every episode, Sam brings in a special guest to dive into the pop culture topics we can't stop thinking about and unpack why they matter. In this one, Sam speaks to music critic Ann Powers about one of my faves, Taylor Swift. They explore how Swift's carefully crafted persona has changed over time, the public's misconceptions about her, and what her legacy will be. Obviously, I'd like to discuss all of these topics and more, including the power she's had over giants like Apple and Ticketmaster, in an interview with Taylor herself. We've asked about 406 times, and we will ask a 407th, because we really want to have a chat with her. But that won't happen just yet, so till then, listen to Sam, and if you're into it, search for Into It in your podcast app and hit follow.
It's me. Hi. I know that.
And it's me. Hello, I'm Sam Sanders, and you are listening to Into It from Vulture, Taylor's version.
Welcome to a new series I'm calling Midnight's Mayhem with me.
Anywho, Taylor Swift is out with a new album this week. I'm sure you've heard.
I'm going to be using this technologically advanced device to help me.
It's called Midnight's. It's her 10th. And most likely it will be a hit, like all the other ones. As we enter this Taylor weekend, I have been thinking a lot about Taylor. And I'm realizing I'm not quite sure how I feel about her. I like a lot of the songs. Blank Space, first among them.
I got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name.
I pay attention to what she's up to.
Okay, so this is a video reenactment of my Tumblr post about fall.
I even watched her documentary.
Just gonna go have fun. No one out there that I know of in the audience actively hates me.
But of all the big pop stars of her era, I feel like I know her the least. And if you ask me to sum up in like 20 seconds or less the meaning of Taylor Swift, you know, yes. I couldn't do it.
Yes, I agree. And but then, well, okay, we're talking before we're
yes.
actually talking.
Okay, we're going to save it. Yeah, we're going to get there.
But I'd like to try. So on the eve of Midnight's, going to chat now with truly one of my favorite music writers of all time.
Thank you Ann so Powers. Much for having me. I'm a critic and correspondent for NPR Music and also written a bunch of books, done a lot of things, and followed Taylor Swift for many, many years.
Ann has been thinking a lot about Taylor Swift since as long as there has been Taylor Swift music on the radio.
To make a massive hit that feels very personal. And I'm ready for that. I would love to hear what that would be.
Okay, yeah. So knowing that we can't have a full conversation about the new album, I do want to ask you something I've been thinking about a lot as the new Taylor Swift album comes to us.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot about pop stars and what they mean, what their philosophy of self is. And I want to talk about the meaning of Taylor Swift as a pop star and as a woman in pop, some 15 plus years into her career. And I want to do this because I feel like when you really think about what Taylor Swift means, she's harder to nail down than it might seem. It feels like a lot of the conventional wisdom about her isn't really true. You know, this idea that she's performing damsel in distress and white Vestal Virgin. Well, not at all anymore, right?
No. Right.
This idea that she writes songs just for teenage girls. Well, not anymore.
Right.
This idea that she's a prude, but also she's had a bunch of famous boyfriends that she's talked about.
Yes.
This idea that she represents women's empowerment, yet she's been in some petty feuds with other women. And I still am not sure how to feel about her whole squad era. I just feel conflicted and confused by her public persona more than I do about other pop stars.
I can see that.
Why? Why? I don't know why she confuses me so much, but she confuses me.
Well, I think one thing that always is important to remember about Taylor is where she started within country music and that sort of consummate craftsperson that she was even when she was a teenager. If disclosure is one of her métiers, you know, if disclosure is one of her main ways of operating in the world, just remember that she comes from a place where disclosure is always crafted so minutely that you can read it as a universal no matter how personal it gets. That's what country music is. Country music is people writing songs that are deeply personal in rooms with other people, like in an office. You go into an office and you're going to write a song about your brother's alcoholism or your, you know, your husband's bad experience in Iraq or something, but you're doing it in an office as a professional.
And you're
going
to workshop it.
Right, and you're going to workshop it and you're going to look for the perfect rhyme. So I think these are sort of like two rival impulses within Taylor Swift. There's the part of her that's always going to be that high achiever, that high school high achiever, you know, that wants to craft the perfect song and is looking, you know, toward a lineage that perhaps she's abandoned officially, but that is in her blood of country music.
You're on the phone with your girlfriend. She's upset. She's going off about something that you said. 'Cause she doesn't get your humor like I do.
And then there is the other part of Taylor who looks to genius elders like a Joni Mitchell and says, that's another part of her high achiever. Like, I want to learn how to truly disclose.
I sit and watch you reading with your head low.
I hear a constant pulling back in Taylor. Like, I hear a constant, how much can I say? How can I say this musically in a way that still makes it relevant to a 14-year-old and her mom and her aunt, you know, and the radio programmer I still want to play my music, but where it feels personal. So she's got that superego. She has the strongest superego of any artist, you know, any musical artist we've ever had. Well,
explain.
I just think her music is so much about kind of order in storytelling and creating the perfect frameworks and finding the perfect characters.
Rebecca rode up on the afternoon train. It was sunny. Her salt box house on the coast took a mind off St. Louis.
And so she's got that intellectual side, just like constantly challenging her emotional side, you know? And so for me, she doesn't seem that elusive. She just seems well-managed internally. And I think that's frustrating for us though, you know?
Yeah, because like for me, it's like on the one hand, she is an incredibly confessional singer-songwriter
right.
who wants to share so much of herself in a way that feels raw.
Yes, absolutely.
But she's also a very calculating pop star.
Totally. At the same time.
Yeah. And usually those two things don't go together.
Right.
And yet, you know? And so I think it's hard for me to wrap my head around that.
Well,
you know?
To make a probably completely inappropriate leap, and people are going to jump like on me big time for this, it's kind of like Bob Dylan.
Oh my goodness.
In comes Romeo, he's moaning. You belong to me, I believe.
Expound. Tell me everything.
Well, I just think, you know, Bob Dylan's always talked about himself as like a channel for the culture and stuff. But there's a side of him in his songwriting that's very much like about kind of being a ruffian, being an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
But then no one from the beginning to this point in his career, no one in music has been as aware of his own legacy, of his own reputation, of his own place in history. And I see that ambition in Taylor Swift. And I think maybe that's what's confusing too, because, okay, we get it with the Bob Dylan in our patriarchal society that favors white men. You know, okay, Bob Dylan wants to be great. He wants to be historical. How can a, you know, a young woman who looks like a supermodel, how can she dare to think she could be historical? And yet yeah. she does.
And yet she does. Well, and she does. She's very much aware of like where and how she wants to fit into history.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
It seems her entire career, she's been quietly chasing Joni Mitchell because she knows
this is
a clear lineage that she wants to establish. And it's funny. I feel like she worries about legacy a lot more than someone like Beyoncé or Adele does, which is interesting to me.
Well, I think Beyoncé thinks about legacy in terms of her family.
When I look in your eyes, I feel alive.
Like literally, and then also sort of business-wise. Like she's built an empire. We call it an empire. We could also call it a family. It's like literally, what am I passing on to the next generation? And also culturally and politically, what am I passing on to the next generation? I think Taylor's goals are much more individualistic, you know. I want to be remembered as a great artist, capital A.
Yes.
And heck, we could have a whole other conversation about if it's even possible to inhabit the role of the great artist in our moment of virality when everything is so fragmented. I'm not sure, but she's gone pretty far in making the case for herself.
I think. You know, I mentioned earlier a lot of the conventional wisdom of Taylor that I find, if not true, at least confusing. What is a piece of well-accepted conventional wisdom about Taylor Swift that you think isn't really true at all?
That she's petty. I don't think she's petty. I think she is embedding kind of serious messages in these very individualistic, very, very seemingly confessional tales. I've been biting my tongue here, wanting to talk about the scarf, the immortal scarf.
Left my scarf there at your sister's.
No, the famous Jake Gyllenhaal scarf.
Got it in your drawer even now.
And I can't remember who wrote about that song. Is like about her losing her virginity.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, your sweet disposition and my wide-eyed gaze.
I'm not entering into the cheap a good discussion of whether that's really when she lost her virginity, but it's very interesting if you think about that song and that symbol in that way, because then it doesn't become petty anymore. That's like a major moment in any young person's life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you keep my old scarf from that very first week? Because it reminds you of innocence and it smells like me. You can't get rid of it.
And so I think oftentimes what's happening in the songs that are the most kind of connected to a celebrity narrative, she's actually reaching through her personal narrative, always trying to reach through it to these milestones in people's lives, and especially in the lives of the young women who are so devoted to her.
If you are looking at the entire arc of Taylor Swift's career from like Tim McGraw to now, and you had to make a one or two sentence thesis statement about that career, what is it?
Okay, I think I'm ready to do this, even though I didn't Cliff's Notes it. I didn't prepare.
All right, let's go.
I think she took the confessional songwriter tradition into a new era by paying attention to everything around her and engaging with things we wouldn't expect someone in her identity category, a white, young white woman, to engage with, like hip hop, for example, like the way rappers talk about themselves, you know, as well as those more conventional sources like Joni Mitchell and the internet, all of these things. She looked at how young people are forming their identities and forming their own truths.
You must like me for me.
And she figured out a way to write songs that spoke to that.
We can't make
that also honored the lineage, the classic lineage of confessional singer-songwriting.
Dive bar on the east side, where you at? Falling
And I think in doing that, I'm never going to call her avant-garde, but she's far more innovative than most people give her credit for.
Yeah.
You know? And I think she will go down as one of the greats, inarguably, but that's the reason. The reason is she is sharing a self that's very much of the 21st century, very much relevant to the fragmentation of the self, to the way ourselves are in dialogue with our personae. Every one of us, you know, we're all in dialogue with our Instagram feeds. And she, without making a big pronouncement about doing that, she did it. She found a way to write the perfect pop song about being a human who's also a persona. And we're all doing that now.
More with music critic Ann Powers after the break.
Support for this show comes from NetSuite. People say perfect is the enemy of good, but simple is everyone's best friend. Because when something is simple and easy, it tends to work out for the best. And NetSuite wants to provide products and services tailor-made for your business. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/on, netsuite.com/on, netsuite.com/on.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When I think of like what early Taylor embodied and what she still does is like this idea of like the interior singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
When I was a youth, the people who were like the singer-songwriters just with the guitar, their whole shtick was, I retreat from the world for years.
Yeah.
And what Taylor does is she says, I'm going to be as confessional of a singer-songwriter, but I'm going to have my eyes peeled the whole time.
Exactly.
She has become this surprisingly successful composite of megawatt pop star and bedroom singer songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
Had and like to do both as well as she's done for well over a decade, that is a feat of business and marketing and strategy, whether you like the songs or not.
Oh,
you know?
I totally agree. I mean, I've always thought that a better comparison in some ways than Joni Mitchell is Carole King.
Really?
One of us is changing, or maybe we just stop trying. And it's too late, baby.
Now, Carole King, who also came out of a kind of a song factory, you know, was a songwriter in the Brill Building, wrote incredible songs like Will You Love Me Tomorrow, the greatest hits of the, you know, co-wrote them with her then partner, Jerry Goffin, and then went on to make the album that, and you know, Joni, I still think Blue is number one, but that many people think is the ultimate singer-songwriter album, which is Tapestry, Carole King's album, Tapestry, which does exactly the same thing that you're describing, Sam. It melds the essence of top 40 pop with, you know, these very profound disclosures about one woman's life. It very much connected with the exact place where, you know, feminism was, where women's liberation was at the time, and yet it is enduring and it appeals across generations.
So far away, doesn't anybody stay in one place anymore?
You know, Taylor's different in that she 1989 Red, you know, you could argue that's sort of like her Tapestry era, but she doesn't really have one mega album like that. But I do think she has that gift for making pop music her own.
Yeah.
And so that's where we're going with this. We're saying she is a real living woman who is also the perfect product, the perfect model. I don't know. Does that make her like an AI? Oh my gosh. She's a cyborg. That's where we're ending up.
You know, it's funny. I talked with Gia Tolentino when her last book, Trick Mirror, came out, and she had this chapter about the cyborgification of popular culture. And I was like, who was our biggest cyborg in popular culture, like human but better? She's like, oh, it's Beyonce.
You know, I in my book Good Booty, I wrote about Britney as a cyborg.
Oh.
Britney's not in control of her narrative in the same way, and wasn't, as we all know, but the way she was so perfectly suited to be manipulated by technology, her voice, you know, like that was the voice for that.
Baby, can't you see I'm calling?
Here's something Taylor might not admit to or might not like, but I'm going to say, I bet she listened a lot to those. I mean, there was a reason she wanted to work with Max Martin back in the day. I bet she was like aiming for something Britney-ish.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that's something that maybe Taylor ultimately couldn't do. Maybe she just, and I don't think it's about her talent, but maybe she couldn't drain herself from the work. In the way that, for whatever reason, positive or negative, that Britney could, she couldn't become just a vessel for technology. She always had to reassert her personality.
Yeah. And it's like when I think of like, and I'll take it back to Taylor in a bit, when I think about the version of White Woman that Britney Spears was performing at her peak, it was almost White Woman as sacrifice. She gave her body and her voice to the culture, to the zeitgeist.
Oh, completely.
And she said, give me a hit, I'll sing it. Give me a video, I'll dance in it. I'm a vessel for you to have fun.
Yes.
Like Britney Spears existed just to allow us to have fun through her body, through her visuals, through her music. And when Taylor would ever get that close to it, she would never give herself away enough to just become a vessel.
That's so, oh my God, that's so profound and true. I just remember one time years ago, I was working on a museum exhibit. I was helping curate, and I went to the house where Britney's costume designers had a bunch of her costumes, including like the Toxic costume.
Oh yeah.
But they talked about how she had the perfect body. Like she had a body that was the ultimate body to design these clothes for. And when now we know how hard she had to work to maintain that body, and it really is a tragic story. It's a tragic story that kind of like jumps, now we're going to completely far field, but jumps back to the Whitney story, this person who had like a perfect voice and yet had to give herself her soul for that voice, you know? And Taylor never, I can't think of one moment in her career
she's never
where
given herself
she
away.
Would be associated with sacrifice. Yeah.
There's this thing that Taylor says in her Miss Americana documentary that really stuck with me.
You know, there's this thing people say about celebrities that they're frozen at the age they got famous. And that's kind of what happened to me.
And when I first heard it, I said, yeah, we'll always see Taylor as the 15-year-old crimped-haired girl singing Tim McGraw. That's what we see her as. But then I thought, I don't see Beyonce as 17 and in Destiny's Child anymore. I don't see Adele as being 18, you know, doing those first small songs and albums. Taylor, more than any other artist, has stayed almost crystallized when it comes to age in our imagination, even as she matures very clearly visually and artistically. What's up with that? Why is that? Because I think that statement, you're always the same age you were when you first got famous, is the most applicable to her more than any other artist working today. I think about Kanye West. He is a different man than the College Dropout.
Oh, hell yeah.
Different people, right?
Yeah.
But we still do this thing where Taylor is 15.
Yeah.
It's a Taylor thing, and I can't put my finger on it, so I want you to.
Well, I do have an answer for this, and,
okay.
And it goes into a sensitive place. So, I think about the great song by The Pretenders by Chrissy Hynde, Middle of the Road, where she there's a line in that song where she says, I'm not the one I used to be. I've got a kid. I'm 33. Taylor doesn't have a child. Taylor is not a mother.
Huh.
And in our patriarchal society,
oh, that's true. That's
when
true.
When does a woman change? A woman changes when she becomes a mother. I think, like all the women you mentioned, they became mothers. And I think that is maybe one of the main reasons why we don't accept Taylor as an adult, because the childless woman remains a strange figure in our society, an anomalous figure. And we don't know how to accept childless women as adults. So, hey, I'm going to thank you, Taylor, for not having kids yet, because I think we really need more childless women out there showing their path into, she's not middle age, but, you know, full adulthood. We need that.
You know, it's funny. I asked you to give a thesis statement for Taylor, and you did so beautifully in this chat. And I've been thinking in this whole chat and all week, if I had to give a thesis statement about Taylor Swift, what would it be in advance of this new album, Midnights? And I think I'm there. And I think I just always go back to high school with Taylor, because even as she's become an adult, she still writes about high school love and all of that. And that is like a very fertile ground for her. And when I think of Taylor as an artist and what she wants to accomplish, she wants to be a pop star who is the homecoming queen and also valedictorian.
Yeah.
She wants to be the pop star that is ubiquitously popular and the cool girl. But she also wants to get all A's in everything and get the award for like best student.
Yes, totally.
And she does. She has done that really well. But I wonder if with this album Midnights, or even the next phase of her career, she is turning into the former prom queen, former valedictorian, coming back for the 10 or 15 year reunion.
Oh my goodness.
With her shoulders down a bit and ready to tell you some stories.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's what we're going to get from this next version of Taylor. And I got to say, the version of Taylor that I most want to hang out with is not the prom queen, not the valedictorian. It is the grown woman coming back for the reunion, smoking cigarettes in the back and talking shit. That's what I want. So that is my thesis statement of Taylor, if I had to give one.
I am a little worried that her Midnight Confessions might be a little mild. I don't know. You know, I mean, who knows? Who knows? But we know she's lived a little. We know that she's had some wild nights. Give us a wild night. I'll give you a cigarette.
Right? I'll light it up for you. Put me in a lyric. I'll take it.
Yeah.
I can't help but think about her and everybody making music this year and compare them to what Beyonce is doing.
Of course.
And I feel like Beyonce has gotten to a level of fame and power where she just does exactly what she wants to do. Mm-hmm. And she made a brilliant, dense album full of musical ideas and musical throwbacks, kind of just for fun.
I agree.
And said, take it or leave it. No videos. Here it is.
Yeah.
And she just reached this level where she's so at the height of her powers. Mm-hmm. She could spend as much money to make exactly what she wants. And even her just like hanging out in the band hall after school, having fun with her band. Yeah. It's still brilliant.
Yes.
And I wonder what is the musical equivalent of that for someone like Taylor. But will Taylor ever give herself up to the music enough to make her own renaissance? Renaissance feels like Beyonce saying, fuck everything else, it's just the fun music.
Yes, that's very true.
And I'm not sure if Taylor Swift will ever be that kind of pop star.
That is a good question. Can she do that? Because in a way, on Renaissance, it's of course Beyonce is still present, but she like gave the spotlight to others. She gave the center to others, to her historical reference points, to the queer community, to, you know, her collaborators and her, even the samples to Big Frida again, you know, which is so cool. And it's not that I think Taylor is afraid of giving away the spotlight exactly, but I don't think she experiences the spotlight in that same way. Again, her making of a self has been that's her artistic project. So how do you become selfless, which is sort of what Beyonce did on that record, when the self is really everything for you? And I don't mean that in an insulting way. I think many great artists, you know, it's like we could think of her as a self-portrait artist. I'm still trying You know, like that painter who paints themselves over and over again.
Yeah.
Again, the Joni Mitchell. And what is in the frame if it's not Taylor? Who is in the frame if it's not Taylor? I don't know.
Thanks again to music critic Ann Powers.
Support for this show comes from Virgin Atlantic. Travel can be stressful. I don't think that's a controversial take. Sure, we all love taking a vacation and that moment we finally get a chance to relax, but we're always so focused on the destination that the journey just feels like a means to an end. Well, what if it wasn't? What if the time you spent getting there was just as enjoyable as the vacation itself? That's what Virgin Atlantic believes. That's why they offer loads of special extra touches that make your trip one to remember for all the best reasons. Picture this, you've made it to the airport, checked in your bags, and finally have a moment to settle in before takeoff. If you're flying upper class, you could be putting your feet up in a Virgin Atlantic clubhouse at London Heathrow with food made fresh to order and champagne delivered straight to your table with a tap of a QR code. I mean, it's rude not to, right? Once you're in the air, the experience continues with deliciously different dining, seriously comfy seats, and the best crew in the sky by miles. Check out virginatlantic.com for your next trip and see the world differently. Support for this show comes from Ramp. Are you overwhelmed with managing your business expenses, vendor payments, and accounting? Is your finance software just not cutting it? Or maybe you're just looking to cut all that wasteful spending? Ramp could be a total game changer for you and your business. Ramp is the corporate card and spend management software designed to help you save time and put money back in your pocket. Ramp gives finance teams unprecedented control and insight into company spending. With Ramp, you're able to issue cards to every employee with limits and restrictions and automate expense reporting so you can stop wasting time at the end of every month. Plus, Ramp is easy to use. You can get started, issue virtual and physical cards, and start making payments in less than 15 minutes, whether you have 5 employees or 5,000. Not only that, but Ramp can save you money. They estimated that businesses that use Ramp save an average of 5% the first year. And now you can get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/Kara, ramp.com/Kara, ramp.com/Kara. Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Culture Geist. Culture Geist. You're listening to Culture Geist. Culture Geist. I don't know, y'all.
And now for a segment we're calling Culture Geist. About all the things we can't stop thinking about. The culture that's haunting you, haunting me, haunting all of us, for better or worse.
All right, this is Anusha, managing editor at Vulture, and this week I've been absolutely haunted by the work of Colleen Hoover, a wildly popular romance author who was discovered by BookTok during the pandemic, and she literally outsold the Bible this year. Her books typically feature a white cis-hetero romance, and the protagonist is almost always working through some sort of major past trauma, having a lot of emotions and a lot of sex. Anyway, she has a new book out this week, It Starts With Us, which has already been on the Amazon bestseller list for 13 weeks and is certainly number one by the time you're hearing this. But I guess rather than explain why her work is haunting me, I'm just going to let it haunt you too. So don't say I didn't warn you, but without further ado, a dramatic line reading from Ugly Love by Colleen Hoover. Thank you for this baby, she says from the back seat. He's beautiful. I laugh. You're responsible for the beautiful part, Rachel. The only thing he got from me was his balls. She laughs. She laughs hard. Oh my God, I know, she says. They're so big. We both laugh at our son's big balls.
Hi, my name is Lauren Passell of Podcast The Newsletter. I love everything you've done, Sam. I'm
Sam, I'm so glad you asked about a pop culture moment that has been haunting us. Do you remember in 2021 when there's this 22-year-old named Mia Ponsetto, and she accused this 14-year-old kid of stealing her phone and basically attacked him in the lobby of this like hotel in Manhattan? And then she had the nerve to go on an interview with Gayle King wearing a daddy hat.
You seem to have attacked this teenager about the phone, and then it turned out he didn't even have your phone.
Okay, so let's...
That's the thing.
Gayle is just trying to get Mia to hold herself accountable, and Mia is not having it. And the girl, she said enough to Gayle. She said enough to Gayle King wearing a daddy hat.
You're old enough to know better.
Oh, the hotel
did
have my...
You're 22.
All right,
Gayle, I get it.
Enough. The hotel did have my phone. The hotel did end up having my phone.
That image of her wearing that daddy hat, I think about it. I think about it once a week. I it made me understand that I don't understand people. And this is the moment that haunts me.
Hi, this is Catherine Van Arendonk. I'm a critic at Vulture. And right now I cannot stop thinking about countertops. I am specifically thinking about countertops on television and what it means when some characters get obsessed about certain parts of their homes and what their countertops need to be. And specifically what I'm thinking about is the new Netflix show, The Watcher, which is an adaptation of a New York Magazine story by our own Reeves Wiedemann. But in that show, the main character, played by Bobby Cannavale, buys a new house which has Carrara marble, and he is just obsessed with ripping out the Carrara marble countertops because he can't make red sauce on it.
Well, you see, I don't like Carrara marble. You know, I'm Italian. I like to cook.
Carrara marble is Italian, you fucking moron.
Yeah, well, you don't. You
which
can't make.
Which I then Googled, and yeah, I guess it does stain more easily. Except then he puts in a butcher block island, and what stains more than wood? And what do these shows mean if they can't even get the details right about the countertops, and why won't people use quartz? Those are my thoughts.
Thanks again to Catherine, Lauren, and Anusha. Listeners, do you have a culture geist? A thing in the culture that's been haunting you for days or weeks or even years? Share it with us. The more specific you are, the better. Send us a short voice memo to intuit@vulture.com. intuit@vulture.com. All right, Intuit is hosted by me, Sam Sanders. The show is produced by Janae West, Travis Larchuk, Jelani Carter, and Gabi Grossman. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman. Our engineer is Daniel Turek. Our music is composed by Breakmaster Cylinder. And Hannah Rosen is the editorial director of audio at New York Magazine. All right, listeners, we are back next Thursday with a new episode. Till then, all my best to all the Swifties as you dive deep into Midnights. All right, bye.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So.
Brainstorm got too big? Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.